now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to talk about a few different subjects. The first will be what somebody can do. Well, these are suggestions. I don't tell people what to do. I give them options, give them suggestions, give them ideas. What someone can do when they find out that they are having alien encounters, alien abduction experiences. And that will segue into a broader discussion, or monologue rather, about how our Arcantic forces utilize addictions against us. A lot of people don't realize that addictions are a key component of the Arcantic manipulation, be it hyperdimensional, alien, etc., or increasingly military, covert black ops through electromagnetic beaming, through manipulation of emotions, etc., and manipulation of people around us, right? We have to take self-responsibility for our actions, but it doesn't help when we're surrounded or we allow people into our experience that have, let's say, self-destructive behaviors which are rubbing off on you, right? So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk a bit about AI, interesting article. Apple has come out with some new and improved AI technology. F you very much, Apple, right? And also, I'm going to talk about some geopolitical issues. And I'll talk about the geopolitical issues first, and then there's a historical basis for it. The ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever the hell you want to call it, is suddenly flaring up in the Philippines. Surprise, surprise, the Philippine President Duterte has made a pivot, as they say, towards the Chinese and the Russians. He would like economic help from the Chinese. He would like a lessening of tensions over the Spratly Islands in the South China Sea with China. He would like closer relations with Russia. And all this, of course, entails moving away from the U.S., the Americans. Long-standing history of U.S. manipulation over the Philippines. This goes back to the so-called Spanish-American War, the second foray. A lot of people say it's the first foray, but actually the second foray of the U.S. meddling in other nations and to the point of invading other countries. The first, of course, was the Mexican-American War, which resulted in the U.S. obtaining what we now know as Texas, California, New Mexico, Arizona. And the Spanish-American War started out by, surprise, surprise, a false flag, where the USS Maine, a battleship, was blown up in Havana Harbor, and the yellow journalism of the time, the jingoistic journalism of the time, and still to this day, blamed the Spanish for this atrocity. And this was the casus belli, the justification for the U.S. going to war with Spain. This false flag event in Havana Harbor where a U.S. battleship was blown up, right? Think of Pearl Harbor when several U.S. battleships were blown up, but mysteriously, the U.S. aircraft carriers were nowhere to be found. In fact, they had been sent off to Wake Island on a make-work project to drop off some planes. Admiral Halsey, who was part of that task force that dropped off those planes, smelled a rat immediately, and being the upstanding guy that he was, stood up for his friend, Admiral Husband Kimmel, who was scapegoated for not being prepared at Pearl Harbor, a whole nother story, which I won't get into. So we've seen this shtick before, right? More than once, blowing up a U.S. ship and then blaming it on the enemy. U.S. ships coming under fake attack in the Gulf of Tonkin and Vietnam, and then whole war ensues out of that. And we saw this with the battleship Maine blowing up in Havana Harbor, blame it on the Spanish, and then go to war with them. The first world war the U.S. was involved in. And they invaded Cuba, and they also invaded the Philippines. And as we've seen again and again in recent times, in the process of liberating the Filipinos from Spain, they managed to wipe out conservatively about 1 million Filipinos, I think more than that. Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark reckons they wiped out at least 1 million Filipinos. And if you read the accounts from that time and how the American soldiers and Marines and Navy personnel were openly bragging about raping Filipino women and young girls and wiping out whole villages and just slaughtering people wholesale. That's where the term gook came from, was gugu, was the original term that the American military used to describe the Filipinos. They called them gugus, and then later on, decades down the track, that morphed into gooks, which they used to demonize the people of Vietnam, Southeast Asia in general. And when you hear the term boondocks, oh yeah, like he's way out there in the boondocks, living away from society. That term comes from the American occupation of the Philippines. Bundok means mountains. And nowadays you hear people talk about boondockers being boots, right? Or military boots. But bundok is mountain in Tagalog, in most of the Philippine dialects pronounced one way or the other. That morphed into boondocks. They live way out in the boondocks. That's where that term came from. So the point of relevance is the U.S. had meted out wholesale slaughter in what became known as, quote, the Philippine Insurrection. Once again, blame the victims, right? It's like they went around slaughtering all these Native Americans, the Federal Army would, and then every once in a while, when Federal Army troops would get surrounded and wiped out by the Native Americans, that was reported in the media as a massacre. It's not just a fair fight between two opposing forces. No, when the American soldiers, the federal soldiers, get wiped out by the Native Americans, that becomes a massacre. That's how it's reported in the media. Everything is spin control. Everything is meant to inflame our passions. Everything meant to piss us off and get in a highly agitated emotional state. And nobody was weeping crocodile tears for the most part. Not many people were weeping crocodile tears for the 1 million plus Filipinos who were wiped out in the Philippines by the U.S. military when they liberated the Philippines from the Spaniards. And all that came about as a result of a false flag bombing of that U.S. battleship, the Maine, in Havana Harbor, right? And then the Americans occupied the Philippines for decades thereafter. And then you have to read a book out there if you can find it, Imperial Cruise. It's a great book. And there's a number of other books one can find about the subject. But long story short, the powers that be had goaded Japan into an imperialistic, militaristic posture in the Far East. It was people like William Howard Taft, who was at one point the skull and bonesman governor general of the Philippines. And it was people like Theodore Roosevelt, U.S. president at one time, and others like him who goaded the Japanese into waging war with Russia, waging war against China, waging war against Korea. And then, as in the case so many other times, the U.S. did a 180 and said, oh, you're the bad guys going around invading all these countries. Now we have to come in, the white knights, the cavalry, call it what you will, come in and fix things because we're the good guys. And eventually this resulted in the Japanese occupying the Philippines in World War II, the Americans having to invade the Japanese, rather the Philippines, in order to reclaim it, etc., etc. And then after that, Ferdinand Marcos, a U.S. intelligence asset, was installed as a puppet dictator. And the excuse the U.S. used for many years was, we need the Philippines as a bulwark against communism. There we go again. Against communism, the Far East, the dominoes effect, yada, 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 of all these countries in Asia falling like dominoes to communism, and it has to be resisted. The Philippines was a bulwark, considered a major strategic asset in the Philippines, an unsinkable aircraft carrier, if you will, the same way that the U.S. in many ways, well, it's kind of a mutual thing with the U.S. and Great Britain, but Great Britain was likewise, in a way, an unsinkable aircraft carrier with all the U.S. air bases and military assets. And the Philippines was regarded as the same. You know, Subic Bay Naval Base, at one time the largest U.S. naval base in the world, bar none. You have the U.S. forces doing their jungle environmental survival training there in the Philippines. You had the U.S. Marines there, Clark Air Base there. Along with Okinawa, the Philippines was like one of the main staging grounds for deployment into Southeast Asia. A lot of troops stopped off in the Philippines and Okinawa for last-minute training, etc., before shipping out to Southeast Asia to engage in the Vietnam War. Marcos had declared martial law because he was afraid of communist insurgency, etc., etc. And for decades under Marcos, the Philippines was a military dictatorship. People disappearing there the same way they disappeared in Argentina and Chile and other places where U.S. and U.S. proxies were fighting an alleged communist insurgency. So fast forward to today, Duterte makes a very public shift away from the U.S. and says a number of uncomplimentary things about the U.S. in the process. I think he called Obama a son of a bitch or something like that. And in his speeches, and you ought to listen to some of his speeches, he really takes the U.S. to task for a lot of the problems in the world. And then, surprise, surprise, right on time, like a Swiss watch, clockwork, surprise, surprise, ISIL, ISIS start acting up in the southern part of the Philippines, the large island of Mindanao, and outlying areas. Now, for a long time, it must be understood, there has been a Muslim presence in the southern Philippines, primarily in the southern Philippines. The Philippine Moros were known as, or rather, the Filipinos that were Muslims were known as Moros, M-O-R-O-S, and like their religious brethren in the Mediterranean and elsewhere, the Moros were into piracy, kidnapping, raiding, etc., etc. And the U.S. and the Philippine government for a long time had fought what amounted to a counterinsurgency in the central and primarily southern Philippines against the Moros. And then over time, we have another Muslim terrorist group, so-called, called the Abu Sayyaf, and they're into kidnapping and extortion and raids and whatnot, an irritant to the Philippine government and the Philippine military. Now, when it suited them, the powers that be, the deep black state, would utilize anybody, actually. Muslim, communist, Marxist, it didn't matter. Like, to give you an example, just to digress for a second, for many years there was this communist insurgency group known as the NPA, the New People's Army, and they had supposedly an independent terrorist group, strike force, called the Sparrows. Right, because they strike so fast like a sparrow, woo-woo, right? And they were largely, the NPA, New People's Army, was largely the justification for the U.S. to have a military presence in the Philippines for so long, because as is often the case, they make foreign aid contingent upon accepting counterinsurgency advisors. It didn't matter if there were no insurgents. That's a detail. They'll just point at the campesinos in Central and South America, i.e. the peasants. You know, oh, those are the insurgents, right? And then they'll bring in the U.S. counterinsurgency experts, like places like from places like Fort Bragg and Fort Benning, Georgia, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, Fort Benning, Georgia, and other places. For many years, there was the infamous School of Americas that would train future Latin American torturers, dictators, counterinsurgency specialists, etc., and turn them loose in their own countries. Well, the same thing was done in the Philippines. They created this fake counterinsurgency, the Hukbalahap counterinsurgency in the Philippines. I think I mentioned this in my interview with Dr. Hamamoto, really switched on guy. And the New People's Army was used as a justification for many years for the Philippines to be in a military dictatorship. But when it suited them, they blamed the New People's Army for assassinations, right? Nicholas Roe, a classic example. Nicholas Roe had spent about 5 years in a either a Viet Cong or North Vietnamese prisoner of war camp. He escaped. And as a matter of fact, the modern-day SEER course, Army Special Forces Survival Escape Resistance Evasion, is named after Colonel Nicholas Roe. And actually, Colonel Nicholas Roe played a key role in developing that program based on his own experiences for being as being a POW for many years until he escaped. Well, Nicholas Roe could escape from the Vietnamese communists, but he couldn't escape from Black Ops because he was assassinated. He was, at the time of his assassination, he was the military advisor in the Philippines, and he was assassinated, and the assassination was blamed on the New People's Army, but that's highly questionable. Apparently, Colonel Nicholas Roe, like so many, his full name was James Nicholas Roe, Nick Roe for short. He was an Army Special Forces so-called Green Beret. And, he, you know, like so many other colonels in his era and probably today, they have their own little network. They have a network of other people of about the same rank who keep each other informed as to what's going on in their respective spheres of influence. And it's quite possible Colonel James Nicholas Roe became aware of CIA drug trafficking. Check out Operation Watchtower, I think it is. This is what happened to a number of Army Special Forces personnel, Colonel Edward Catolo and others, who were part of this Army Special Forces / CIA operation to bring in drugs from Colombia into U.S. military air bases in Panama. And the Mossad and the CIA systematically began eliminating Army Special Forces personnel from, you know, lower-ranking enlisted personnel, non-commissioned officers, and up to high-ranking colonels, just systematically wiping the slate clean. It's quite possible Colonel James Nicholas Roe was part of that equation as far as the assassinations go. So the point of relevance is that, yes, the New People's Army were considered communist, right? And, well, no one's really heard from them since because the emphasis has shifted to this bogus global war on terror by the woo-woo Muslims. And now the emphasis has shifted to this Muslim insurgency in the southern part of the Philippines. And, you know, with Abu Sayyaf, they've been active for some time now. And it's always questionable who actually is running these terrorist organizations of any stripe, whether they're Muslim, whether they're Marxist, whether they're, you know, you have these weird combinations, Bader Meinhof, a bunch of disaffected, so we're told, German college students with leftist Marxist leanings, and somehow they team up with the Palestinian Liberation Organization. You know, like to what purpose does it serve Palestinians to work with German terrorists to destabilize Germany. How does that help, you know, the Palestinians reclaim their homeland? None of that even makes sense, you know what I mean? But that's what this is all about. It's just confusion, deception. What was it that the late, great General Thomas Stonewall Jackson said? Always mystify, mislead, and deceive your enemy. Words to that effect. So now, fast forward to today, and we have another Muslim insurgency. Well, there has been, like I said, all along the Moros, and then they became, over time, or a branch of them became the Abu Sayyaf, and then now we have ISIS, ISIL, Daesh there in the southern Philippines. And the intention, of course, is to destabilize President Duterte, who's made this pivot, this shift, away from the U.S., right? So suddenly, out of the blue, this insurgency just intensifies with ISIS, ISIL, Daesh in the southern Philippines. They already had Abu Sayyaf. They've already been dealing with Amaro, you know, for generations. There's even a corny John Wayne movie, if you can believe that, set in the Philippines, and the Moros were the bad guys. So anyway, enough about that. But just one last thing about the, you know, what's going on in the Philippines is that cannot help but be of extreme interest to the Chinese, because the Chinese, they're all about business. They're all about spreading their influence through financial business means. The Indonesian area of the world, north of Australia, Indonesia, Jakarta, Java, those places, some of the heaviest sea lane traffic in the world. A large chunk of the world's commerce goes through passes through Indonesia, and also the sea lanes between Indonesia and further north to the Philippines. This is incredibly important and significant from a military economic perspective. And the last thing the Chinese would want is for the Philippines to be in a state of utter turmoil, because that can't help but create problems for the Chinese, right? So let's watch how that whole process develops. Okay, now I'm going to talk about this article that I came across from what magazine, or rather what website is this? It's phys.org. Physicist, I guess, .org would be the long name for it. PHYS.org. Papa Hotel Yankee Sierra dot Oscar Romeo Golf. Phys.org. And the article is entitled, Apple's New Mobile AI Chip Could Create a New Level of Intelligence. Dateline, May 30th, 2017, by David Glantz from The Conversation. I guess the conversation is where it was sourced from. And let me read some of this because it's very interesting. Apple is reportedly working on a chip called the Apple Neural Engine. Neural is brain, neurology, of course, which would be dedicated to carrying out artificial intelligence processing on its mobile devices. The addition of this type of capability would catalyze the use of AI on mobile devices, although it is already being used extensively to power digital assistants like Siri and Google Assistant. These technologies rely on computer servers to process data sent to them rather than the processing happening on the mobile device itself. Augmented reality and digital assistants are not the only applications of AI that will become important on mobile devices. Once the capability is made available to all mobile application developers, it will bring new types of capabilities to mobile devices. Health applications, for example, will be able to tell when body readings from sensors on the phone or associated wearable devices are abnormal and need acting on. Yeah, I could see that. Oh, you know, you need to see a doctor about your cholesterol levels and get on those statin drugs, right? Or, conversely, it could be like, well, you need to take your psych meds now. You're about due for them, or overdue. And wouldn't it be interesting if it was like a Siri-type voice, you know? At the At the intersection, make a left turn, right? It's time to take your psych meds. I've spoken to a lot of people, and sometimes Siri freaks out. In certain cities, right, telling you to make left turns that, you know, like 3 or 4 blocks behind you, you know. I've spoken to more than one person who said they felt like throwing Siri out the window. Anyway, health applications, for example, will be able to tell when body readings from sensors on the phone or associated wearable devices are abnormal and need acting on, okay? And they're going to report all this information to the medical tyranny and psychiatric tyranny, thank you very much, right? But the uses are potentially limitless and will bring about a new phase in how we rely on applications and our mobile devices in everyday life. And they will work even when the device is not connected to the internet. And they will work even when the device is not connected to the internet. How thoughtful of them. Strictly speaking, a specific processor is not an essential requirement for using AI on a mobile phone. Chip maker Qualcomm, for example, has provided a software-based approach called the Snapdragon Neural Processing Engine to allow developers using their chips to incorporate AI into their software. An example of this is a car that monitors the driver using a camera and warns when they are using their smartphone or driving erratically. Oh, that's talk about thought police. Do not use your cell phone when you're driving. Bad, bad. Danger, danger. Next thing you know, here come the cops with another beatdown. Specific AI hardware, however, greatly speeds up the process called, quote, machine learning, unquote, and allows for more sophisticated types of AI to be used. Google's AI hardware, called the Tensor Processing Unit, is 15 to 30 times faster than the fastest computer processors and graphic processors that power computers today. These Tensor Processing Units were what gave Google's DeepMind its ability to beat the world champions of the Chinese game of Go. These TPUs also have vastly improved Google's automated language translation software, Google Translate. The inclusion of AI in mobile software is going to massively increase the potential usefulness of that software and through that, how much we come to depend on the mobile phone. Our state of health, for example, is really about how we are doing relative to how we normally feel. And of course, they want to determine how we feel by the drugs they push on us, by the bad news and negative news they push on us, or conversely, the vapid, empty-headed news they push on us. Changes in behavior can signal changes in mental health, including conditions like dementia and Parkinson's. Well, if you stop vaccinating people with aluminium and mercury-laced vaccines, then maybe we won't have so many cases of early-onset dementia. And so many cases of Parkinson's, thank you very much. They can also be precursors of illnesses such as diabetes, as well as respiratory and cardiovascular diseases. Our phones could monitor patterns of activity and even how we walk. This ability would be based on the software learning our normal patterns and once having detected a change, decide what to do about it. Okay, here it is again. This ability would be based on the software learning our normal patterns, and once having detected a change, decide what to do about it. Like it'll determine, well, based on what you're doing and your pattern, right, and how you deviate to that pattern or what you're doing, which conflicts to the programming of the AI, and then it decides what to do about it, i.e., what suggestions to give, who to alert, etc., etc., right? Now, you know, those club membership cards where you're always swiping to get points, you know, if you buy like a bottle of champagne or you go to the store and buy groceries, not only does that track what you buy, but it also creates algorithmic patterns and determines your consumption, what you purchase, and the psychology and potentially your health as it relates to your purchasing patterns, you see. And considering how often our personal data is shared between corporations and intelligence agencies for that matter, there may be implications to this, say as far as like premiums for their health insurance. Because let's say, in our example, the person who uses a membership card, be it for Costco or some other kind of supermarket or whatever the case may be, if the pattern clearly shows the person is a junk food junkie, and that data is passed on to some health insurance company, you know, one fine day, that club member may get a letter in the mail saying, well, based on your history of purchases and consumption, Mr. GMO Nacho Cheese Doritos Breath, we're going to raise your premiums because you're an unhealthy person. Thank you very much. So it's not all just about getting points and, oh, you know, I got enough points now, I can buy a box of wine or something. I could buy something with all these points. Basically, it's all about data mining and pattern recognition. This ability would be based on the software learning our normal patterns and once having detected change, decide what to do about it. And also note how it says, our phones could monitor patterns of activity and even how we walk. And I talked in the past about how even our gait, you know, our ambulatory gait, how we walk, is something that security services monitor. Everybody has a unique, distinctive gait. And trained field operatives, they know that not only do they, on occasion, have to don disguises, you know, put on fake mustaches and put on wigs, but every once in a while, they have to change their gait. You know, this could be done as simply as sticking a coin or something into one or both of their shoes to slightly alter the way they walk, because everything is biometrics now. And with pattern recognition and, you know, super powerful computers, etc., they can track people in a crowd just based on how they walk, right? So here's phones saying, our phones could monitor patterns of activity and even how we walk, you see. And I will include a link for this article in the subpage for this commentary. The phone would be part of a self-directed ecosystem. It's an ecosystem now of intelligent and autonomous machines, including cars. Not only is the driving of autonomous cars completely dependent on AI to function, it is likely that people will eventually share the use of these cars when needed, rather than owning one themselves. Oh, thank you, you know, for reminding us of Agenda 21 or Agenda 31 or whatever the hell they're calling it now. Basically, they're going to phase out cars. And so now they're talking about, oh, you know, we're just going to share cars rather than owning one ourselves because we'll be leaving too big of a carbon footprint, said no corporation ever. AI will again be essential for managing how this sharing functions. AI will again be essential for managing how this sharing functions to manage, that's a bad sentence, to manage the most efficient distribution of cars, directing which cars need to pick up which clients. To do this, the scheduling AI service will need to liaise with AI software on everyone's phones, where and when they will be at a given location, and where they need to get to. Now, this is another problem, too, because when you see these spy movies or operative movies, and when Hollywood makes these movies, all the operatives are good-looking people. They're all handsome. They're all pretty girls. They're all good-looking guys. Like, they just, you know, strutted out of a GQ magazine. They don't look at all like real operatives who could sit next to you on the same terrace cafe for 3 days reading a newspaper, sitting at the same table. You wouldn't even notice them, right? No, in these American movies, they all look Gucci, they all look chic and trendy, and anyway. So this thing is going to plug into our patterning, plug into our day-to-day lives. The movies I was referring to, nowadays are starting to show, you know, some things that operatives do in real life. Like, for example, if someone's being tracked, you'll see them, like, rip out the SIM card, rip out the battery, etc., etc., okay? Because we now, just as, you know, landline phones, we've known for some time that even when they're hung up, they are, quote, hot on the hook and can be used as a listening device for the, you know, basically the entire house, right? Or certainly for a room that the phone is in. But until the recent past, not many people realized that even when your mobile phone is turned off, it's constantly sending out a transponder beacon so that when it's turned on, the NOC, Network Operations Center, will know the location, triangulate the location of the phone and the user based on the signal it's been putting out, right, even when it's turned off. And so what a lot of the drug cartels start doing first, which was later copied by intelligence and special operations, is the drug cartels began using, like, these anonymous phones that you buy from, like, a vendor somewhere. Nowadays, they want all your information, but back in the day, and it doesn't bother these drug cartels or intelligence operatives because they can always provide phony ID. So they would, by hook or crook, buy one of these, say, Nokia-type phone, and they would also buy a bunch of different SIM cards, and they would make one phone call and then toss a SIM card, and then make another phone call, toss the SIM card. And when they send out these, and that idea was first developed by the drug cartels, and it was later copied by Black Ops. And so, like, a lot of times, they'll send out an operative, and he or she may have a special phone that it only dials one place. It could dial like a base or, you know, a network operations center or something. And then conversely, they may have another phone, one that can't be tracked, and they'll provide them with like 30, 40, 50 SIM cards, however much they need, right? So, you know, they'll use a SIM card for only so long, only so many phone calls, and they discard it and they go to another SIM card, right? And that's how they avoid being tracked. Well, needless to say, your average kid out there, you know, taking selfies of themselves and taking pictures of themselves and their friends partying and whatnot, they don't know that this capability exists, right? So basically, everybody is being tracked. Everybody, we already know that, but it's going to be tracking on steroids when they roll out this AI system, because the algorithmic patterning, they're going to know how many people you have in your family, who your friends are, who your networks of friends are. People don't realize that when they take pictures of their children, for example, the phone and or the digital camera can tag a location and a time stamp to each and every picture they take of their children, right? So, and then they go and post these things on Facebook. Oh, it's my kid's five-year-old birthday party, et cetera, et cetera. They have no idea the kind of vital intel they're putting out, you know, in the cyberspace, right? So more and more, we have to start thinking, like, as much as possible, like intelligence operatives in hostile territory, because that's what it is, right? And there may come a time when we have to communicate through dead letter drops and things like that, and learn how to avoid being, you know, surveilled and followed and whatnot. Now, for my lab, it's a little more difficult, even for trained surface-level operatives, because so many my labs are implanted, and the deep black military zeroes in on their bioenergetic frequency. They don't even need implants, right? But, you know, the problem is complicated because so much of the clothing we wear, our apparel, it has RFID chips, so-called passive ones, so that whenever we pass a sensor, you know, the sensor flags it, right? And then, you know, all the dental work so many people have got where really they got implants stuck into their, like, their crowns and into their molars and things like that. Never mind the subcutaneous implants stuck, you know, beneath our skin, right? Subdermal, whatever they call it, when they stick them inside our bodies. So for my labs and project people, it's even more difficult to stay off the radar. I really recommend reading this article because it kind of gives an idea of what they're rolling out. And if this is what they're talking about in open published sources, and, you know, what else have they come up with, right? And let me keep reading this. The phone would be part of a self-directed ecosystem of intelligent and autonomous machines. They're all interlinked, including cars, right? Now, some of you watch Bait Car, right? Where they leave this the motor running for a really expensive car, right? Sitting in some, like, crime-ridden neighborhood. And eventually, just like as, you know, when nighttime descends in the vampire movies or the zombie movies, all the, you know, the critters come out, right? Same thing in some of these crime-ridden rat bag neighborhoods. They leave this bait car with the motor running and a door open. Sure enough, just like zombies, you know, these people come along. Some of them just let out of prison, right? They come along and just acting to their sub-programs and whatnot. They can't help but rip these things off. And they're driving along, they're being monitored, there's air cover watching them, and, you know, they're being trailed and they're being plotted and, you know, back at the operation center, you know, because they got the whole city street map layout on their screen, and they're tracking where this guy's going. And then when they decide they've had enough fun, remotely they shut off the motor, and then they remotely lock all the power locks in the car. The car rolls to a stop. The guy can't escape. Welcome to Popsville, USA, pal. Right? Bait Car. Watch it if you get a chance. So, you know, these things will be synced up to cars, right? AI will again be essential for managing how this sharing functions to manage. That's a very badly written sentence. Skim. AI in a mobile device will also increasingly be used to keep the device protected, checking if applications and communications are secure or likely to be a threat. This technology is already implemented in smart home appliances. This technology is already being implemented in smart home appliances, like digital TVs, for example. Just wave to the camera, or moon them, whatever you see fit, right? But as software, the addition of special AI chips will allow them to be much faster and to do more. Researchers are also looking at analyzing the way we move as a means of uniquely identifying the wearer of a device. I just got into that. I haven't read this article until now, right? I just kind of skimmed through it when I came across it. AI will essentially be able to fill in and apply the understanding and knowledge that not everyone possesses. Even if they do, remembering to do something, even when it is in your own best interest, is sometimes hard. Oh, they just want to help us so much. We're so forgetful. We're so forgetful. We need to be reminded when to take certain pills. And the article ends with, there is a counter argument to the benefits of increasing the intelligence of mobile devices. However, this is the fear that as we come to rely on devices to do things, we will lose the ability to maintain that skill. And that this will eventually impact on a person's overall cognitive ability. Boy, howdy. I guess that's the whole idea. You have been assimilated into the Borg. Resistance is futile. Where's data when you need them? Anywho, that's the part of this commentary about AI. And one last little bit. What I find personally alarming is and I've got just basically by now a passe, old-fashioned iPhone 5S, and it seems to anticipate what I'm going to write. It's like when I use a stylus to tap out my text messages. I'm just always in awe with people just sit there, especially women. You gals have this amazing dexterity with your fingers. You sit there, just tap, 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 and You never seem to make a single error, right? Well, I have to use a stylus. You can get them for a buck at a newsagent somewhere. And I just sit there and I tap out my messages. And not only does the phones nowadays, they track and make note of and log the words you use, the word preference, the syntax, the grammar you use. But they begin to anticipate what you're going to write. They begin to suggest words, which, based on previous patterns, and sometimes what seems really freaky is I would think about using a certain word, which I haven't used too many times, sending out a text message, and voila, there it is. I just, Bartley, use this one, said Siri, right? So it's starting to anticipate already, just as the old-fashioned iPhone 5S's anticipate how we're going to write the context, what your words we're going to use. And now, you know, with the 5G rollout and this AI that Apple is going to be putting out. And again, if Apple is talking about it in an open published forum, then you can bet your bottom dollar that they have something much better and more powerful than that. All right, in the time I've got left, I'm going to talk about what happens when a person comes to grips with the fact that they are having alien ET encounters, particularly of the negative variety. The implications of this realization can be quite shattering and destabilizing for a while because, and again, I'm all about personal responsibility and all that, but one has to take into account the trauma that's induced, the embedded multi-layered trauma from a lifetime's worth of alien abductions. And even if someone has a relative handful of overall physical, well, it's not just physical, but astral, multidimensional abduction experiences and the trauma that has resulted therefrom, it's cumulative trauma. So, okay, person on the left, let's say they only have about 10, 12 alien abduction experiences that they can account for, or perhaps that they've had in their whole life. And the person over here, they've got like 5 or 6, let's just throwing round numbers in the air. They're 25 years old, 5 or 6 abduction experiences. But it's not just the frequency or the amount of the abduction experiences, it's the trauma that each abduction experience instills within that person at a very deep level. And then when one has time to figure out, my goodness, these things are really happening to me, then when one really begins to think about it, they look back in their life. They look back on perhaps poor decision-making, low self-worth, low self-esteem, which led to poor decision-making, which led to bad association with unsavory characters or people with self-destructive, self-abusive behaviors and addictions and habits and whatnot. And then they look back at their life and they think that, man, it seems that I've been kept isolated. Like, you know, why am I not married yet? Why have I never had a long, fulfilling relationship? Well, why do I seem to get connected with negative, toxic, dysfunctional, narcissistic people? It really does factor in the alien abduction encounter experience because they don't want us, the negative ETs, they don't want us to have like a whole life of hunky-dory champagne cruise level contentment, satisfaction, euphoria even, right? They want us at the lower end of the emotional bandwidth spectrum of hopelessness, despair, loneliness, isolation, lack of self-worth, etc. And if one is perceptive enough and they're honest enough with themselves, again, I'm not passing the buck saying the ETs are responsible for all of this, but it is a factor which must be included in the equation that they can literally mess with people's interpersonal relationships. They can literally manipulate people and things to ensure they stay lonely, isolated, in a state of self-loathing and despair. And they can also manipulate people as far as addictions are concerned. And I'll talk about just a couple of them because of three of them in the time I've got left because of their prevalence. And everything in moderation, folks, even natural organic things like marijuana. But in the old days, when marijuana was, let's say, more seedy, right, more seeded, there was a ritualistic aspect even to smoking it, whether it was through a paper or through a pipe or a water pipe, whatever the case may be, the seeds had to be separated, et cetera, et cetera. If someone is trying to get off pot and they're having abduction experiences, and say the person can only score like low grade, what they used to call like burnout weed or headache weed, especially if it's really seeded, like low grade Mexican weed or something. The aliens actually like people to be on that kind of weed because the people just burn out. It's like they don't even really get high after a while. Actually, even with the most high grade pot that people can score, if they keep smoking it all the time, there's no longer a difference between being straight and being buzzed out, where they're just always either buzzed or burnt out. And after a while, they only can, you know, the more they smoke, they can just avoid being burnt out, right? But they don't really get much higher. Everything in moderation, again, the aliens like that. The negative aliens like that because, you know, the person gets neutralized, they just sit there like, you know, phasing out. And especially if it's the low-grade burnout variety type weed, right? And in the old days where there was a lot of seeds, that created a ritualistic aspect where the person had to separate the seeds, yada, yada, yada. And if the person tries to get off pot, what the aliens will literally do, they'll put them in a stage-managed dream where they will have to reenact the whole ritual of, in our example, separating the seeds from the pot, right? And every minute detail is reproduced in painstaking fashion where the person, seemingly in real time, is sitting there cleaning the weed, separating the weed, the seeds from the weed, either rolling it or whatever the case may be, rolling it and creating like a little pile of joints, let's say. And then later on, when the weed became seedless, i.e. sensimilla, and then the botanists started creating these large buds of pot, and that necessitated either adroitly picking apart the buds with their fingers or using scissors, whatever the case may be, right? And, you know, the really skilled people could use their fingernails so they don't get all the resin all over their fingertips. But let's say in our example, in the bud age, the era of the buds, they have to use scissors, right, to, you know, cut up the pot. And what happens is, if the person tries to get off, if they try to quit smoking, right, what the ETs will do is they will make people have dreams, what we called in the old days stage-managed dreams, where they're sitting there, unlike the days of yore when the ETs would make people have dreams of separating the seeds from the pot. Nowadays, they're, you know, they make them have a stage-managed dream where they're sitting there at a table with a pair of scissors and they're cutting up bud, right? Everything reduced down to the most minute detail. And they, when they make them smoke it in the dream, and remember, in our example, it's someone who wants to quit, or at least quit for a while, right? Because they realize they're starting to get burnt out. I think maybe this is where the term chronic came from. Chronic showed up around the 90s. I'd never heard it before, right? Oh, yeah, he's got some chronic. And then later on when I thought about it, I thought, well, chronic kind of makes sense because they're chronic smokers, and no matter how good the pot is, they're chronically burnt out, right, basically. And so the ETs will make them reproduce everything down to the most minute detail of sitting there using scissors to cut the bud up, either putting it in a bong or putting it into a one-hit pipe or into a pipe with a regular-sized bowl or rolling it up into a joint. And then in the dream, the stage-managed dream, when people fire it up and smoke it, right, what they'll do is also the same partiers, the same burnouts that you knew from like eons ago, they'll be back in your dreamscape, looking exactly like they did years ago. And even in the old party houses and the party bedrooms of your pals and buddies in the old days, everything will be reproduced in these stage-managed dreams down to the Led Zeppelin poster on the wall, okay? And so, again, everything is ritualistic, right? The utilization of pot, there is a ritualistic element to it because a number of steps have to be taken before one imbibes in the substance, right? So after all that is done and they're standing around in a circle in the stage-managed dream and they're smoking out, and the time factor is manipulated, factored into the stage-managed dream where the person that's trying to get clean from the pot in the dream, he's standing there and he's watching the joint go around. Okay, this guy takes a hit and he's holding it and hurry up and pass it already, right? Passes it to the next guy, or gal, they take a hit, you know, holds it, pass it on already, works its way around to them. Sometimes people will wake up from such dreams and they're inhaling because in the dream they'd finally gotten the hooter, they put it up to their lips and they started inhaling. And for a split second, upon awakening, they're buzzed again, right? Because the residual pot, the ETs have the means to either synthesize that pot or actually put some pot into their system right onto their receptors. And for a split second, they wake up from such a dream feeling buzzed out. And what that does is it instills a craving, a yearning, a hunger for that buzz again, right? And that's why it makes it difficult for some people to get off of pot. Another example of that is methadrine, crystal methadrine, and its derivative crank. And I learned this from Barbara Bartholik, and I confirmed it myself in my own studies and my own research. I independently confirmed what she had taught me. And that is, what happens is, not only do they get people addicted to these drugs, right? Remember, pharmacopoeia, sorcery, the original name for pharmacopoeia. Sorcery, having the you know, one aspect of a certain type of sorcery is imbibing in certain hallucinogens or other substances in order precisely to commune with certain non-human, in some cases, discarnate entities, right? And so for the meth user, and this is why it's so hard for meth users to get off the drug, is even if they try to stay clean, enter the nefarious ETs again, right? And they make the person dream about using the drug and going through the whole ritual of, you know, creating lines of the drug if they're snorting it or if they're into injecting it, going through the whole rigmarole of preparing a hit for themselves through a hypodermic needle. And then when they wake up, momentarily, they're on the drug again. All the physiological reactions to a hit of the drug, the increased respiration, the pulse rate, the feeling that they get from taking a hit, right? To the point where sometimes these ETs, and the Greys are notorious for this, they'll even go to the extent of injecting the person with a needle filled with methadrine, crystal methadrine. Or there have been cases where the person would have a dream of snorting coke or crank or meth, and then they would wake up and there'd be powder beneath their nose, right? It was an example of the ETs wanting to get the people back on whatever addiction they were trying to get clean from, right? So this really does happen. It sounds crazy, but when you think about how we are emitters, we're resonators of frequency, of emotions, energy, and motion, and how it behooves these negative entities of all stripes to keep us in a lower electromagnetic frequency bandwidth, it makes perfect sense. And another thing, too, is the way the drugs are created, the way they're synthesized, the way the intentions behind them is not just to get the person hooked, but to get the person entity infested. So it makes it easier for entities to attach themselves to this person's auric field and from there comfortably merge the interface, as I call it, interface with the host human. So the entity or entities comfortably merge with that individual. And then we can talk about the raves and the ecstasy, because I've spoken to some of the leaders of the rave movement in different parts of California, Northern California and Southern California. And they told me that ETs and reptilians and snake entities and grays, they're heavily, heavily involved in the direction and the focus of where the rave movement goes. And that one outcome, one side effect of long-term ecstasy use is back pain, chronic lower back pain, and this is a happy hunting ground for negative entities. They will not only go to the trouble of actually inducing an accident to create lower back problems for people, so they lay there and just emit all these frequencies of anguish and misery and hopelessness and despair, but the drugs in our examples, meth and in the rave example, ecstasy, not only do they exude all this excess energy, and which makes them a smorgasbord of loosh for the negative entities, but it allows the entities to eventually interface with the users and take them up as host, and to the point where excessive long-term use leads to, in many cases, lower back problems, which the entities are always looking to bust holes in our auric field, and then from there bust holes into our actual body, our actual physiology, and establish strongholds through areas of chronic pain and chronic illness inside of our body, and then extending outwards through our auric field. So addictions are manipulated, they're modulated, they're reinforced. When a person wants to get off a particular drug and alcohol, the same way, where people will have dreams of passing around bottles of Jack Daniels or Jim Beam and chug-a-lugging it, chug, and they, you know, the taste, the aroma, everything, and momentarily they wake up and they're drunk, right? And they have that taste in their mouth of just having drank alcohol. And the whole intention behind all this is to get the people back on to that particular addiction or addictions. Because some people will have dreams of all of it, you know, the meth, the cocaine, the pot, the booze, because they're addicted to all of it, and the ETs want them addicted to all of it. Okay, and then the whole sex addiction thing, which is a whole nother topic. Probably I should take the time at some point to do a commentary on that, but suffice it to say for now, the porn addictions is destroying the youth of the world. Because, you know, the kids today have access to porn right on their smartphones. And when they go home, they have it right on their laptops, right on their PCs, right on their tablets, etc., etc., etc. It's destroying and warping their minds and creating entirely new neural pathways which route straight back to the lizard part of the brain, the R complex. And along with a lot of manipulation by, you know, various and sundry negative ETs, including reptilians, a lot of those young boys, so addicted to porn, they can wind up later on being perpetrators. They can wind up being, at the very least, they will objectify women. They will no longer see a living, breathing, thinking, emoting, feeling young girl, young woman, older woman. They'll just see, like, basically a sex object to be used and discarded at will. That's very much a reptilian mindset. We've reached the end of this week's segment of Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, and I want to thank all of our listeners out there for your support, for your encouragement, for the wonderful comments that you're making on the YouTube channel. And we really couldn't do this without you. The listenership is what drives us, what makes us want to keep going. So anyhow, wherever you may be, whatever you may be doing, dear listeners, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next week.